All right, Jamal, say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Lamed Dalid. We left off, if you remember, again, just a few lines up from the bottom on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. So the Gemara says, remember, we spoke about the interesting case in the Mishnah of where two men married two women, and somehow, again, there was a mix-up. There was a mix-up, and neither man is sure exactly which woman it was that he originally married. So the Mishnah spoke about, again, the multiple prohibitions that could result from this union. So remember, again, the Mishnah said if the two men are brothers, then again, when they have relations with the women, so then ultimately they violated Eishes Ach, the potential prohibition of a brother's wife. If ultimately, again, both the women were sisters, then Lemaisa, again, what? They would have violated the prohibition of a wife's sister. If both of them were nidos, then Halacha Lemaisa, again, they have the issue of nidos. So these are the multiple prohibitions. I'm sorry, and also the fourth prohibition, ultimately, of Eishes Ish, of the past, that was what the Mishnah stated first, the possibility that each one is married. So remember, again, the Gemara was bothered by the wording of the Lashon of Hechlifu. Let's just pick up from the Gemara again quickly. So the Gemara says, Hechlifu. What do you mean, Hechlifu? Hechlifu sounds like they exchanged. Midi Bereshi, asking, are you talking about people who intentionally engage in this type of behavior? Visu, furthermore, says the Gemara, Hadutani Rabbi Chiya, Harei Kan Sheish Esrei Chatos. First of all, again, Rabbi Chiya said, remember that among these four people, there are 16 different chatos. Now, we'll say, why are there 16 different chatos? Because each one potentially has violated four different things. Each one has violated, technically, adultery. Each one has violated, technically speaking, brother-sister. Each brother's wife. Each one has violated, technically speaking, wife's sister. And each one has violated nida. Again, remember, these are the worst case scenario in all of this. So, if remember, and everyone's chai for that. Each man, each woman, which means that collectively, they have a total of 16 chatos obligations. Even amazing, but if this is intentional, mi'ika karbon, is there a sacrificial obligation when one violates intentionally? Of course, the answer to that is no. You're only chayiv for a karbon if you unintentionally violate. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, Tani Amr Yehuda, Tani Huchlafu. Rabbi Huda says, in reality, you have to change the wording of the Mishnah, not to Hechlifu, which means they exchanged, i.e. a willful exchange, but rather Huchlafu. They were mixed up. They were mixed up. They were exchanged, meaning it was accidental. Hachanai Mistabra, this seems to be clear. Diktani Seifa, because if you look at the end of the Mishnah, Imhayu Kitanos Shein Ru'uyos Leilad Machzirin Oso Miyad. Remember the Mishnah said, if the women, remember the Mishnah said that they, after they figure out, you know, who belongs to who, ultimately they have to wait 3 months before resuming living with their husband in order to ensure that they're not pregnant from the man that they were with. But yet the Mishnah said that if the girls are ketanos, who are not able of becoming pregnant, then what? Then the ma'is, again, they could return to their husband immediately. Now, if you're talking about a situation where, again, the swap was intentionally, it was intentional mishario, would they be permitted to go back to their husband? So the Gemara says, well, that's not a good proof. Halo kashya, because pitoi ketana onis ninu. Because again, pitui ketana means seducing a ketana, meaning that if a ketana has relations with another man, ultimately, again, that is considered to be a situation of ones. That is considered to be a situation of violation because the assumption is that she doesn't have full das. The ones be, so a mishra shari, and again, obviously, if a woman is violated, she's still permitted to her husband. Ella diktani mafishin osan shlosha chadashim shema mu'ubarosein. Ha love mu'ubaros shayon. They're both saying again. Rather, the Mishnah says, the Gemara says, but look at the end of the Mishnah that says that they have to wait to return to their husbands. And after they straighten this whole thing out, they have to wait to return to their husbands for 3 months in order to make sure they're not pregnant from the first man. Which sounds like what? That once we determine that they're not pregnant, they are permitted to their husbands. The Iba maze it. And if this was an intentional switch, Mishari, would they be permitted to their husbands? Ella lav shmamina huchlifu shmamina. Rather, says the Gemara, change the word of the Mishnah from hichlifu, which means they exchanged, to huchlifu. They were exchanged, meaning it was an accident, it was literally a mix-up, and therefore the mice, again, that's why ultimately they'll be permitted to their respective husbands after the mix-up gets clarified. Top of Lama Dalet. Uman haitana the islay isr kolal the isr mosif the isr bas achas. I will say, ask Stigimar over here, who is the Tana? Who is the Tana ultimately who holds that there is an issue of there is an issue of Isser Kolo. Remember, again, about say Isser Kolo means a secondary Isser that ultimately goes ahead and has a broader reach than the first. Isser Mosif, which ultimately, again, remember, is a secondary Isser that adds on to the first Isser, the Isser Basachos, and an Isser that ultimately, again, simultaneous Isserim, because it will say all of these aspects are present in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, Rabbi Yehuda said the name of Rav, Rabbi Meir, it's Rabbi Meir, Disanya, Yesh Ochel Achila, let's listen to this case, Yesh Ochel Achila Achos, V'chayiv Ala Arba Chatos, V'asham. There's one person, who could eat one thing and be chayiv for four different chatos offerings and one asham. How would you have a case like this? Tameh, if a person is Tameh, Sha'achol Chaylev, who ate what? Forbidden fats. Vuhu nosar min mukdashin, and what? That fat is nosar. Remember, Rabbi say any time that you have leftover sacrificial parts after the window of consumption for the particular carbon has closed, that's called nosar. So I'm tameh, eating forbidden fats, but it's not just forbidden fats. It's forbidden fats that are now nosar from the carbon. Biyom kippur. Oh, it's a busy day, right? All on Yom Kippur. So we'll say, here is a case where from one act of consumption, I could be chayiv for four different chatas offerings, as well as one asham. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says, oh, thank you. Yes, thank you. I will say, thank you very much. It's amazing. I put it on my shtender, and I still can't remember to look at it. I just hold it, just tape it to my forehead. It might be a little bit easier. So again, our shiur today is sponsored by Lydia Berman in memory of her grandfather, Shlomo Yoel Solomon Ruback, and by Baruch Fischel and Sonia Kozlovsky and Harry and Adrian Kozlovsky and their families, in promotion of the yard sites of their paternal grandparents and uncle, who were all murdered by the Nazis. Yimach Shemam v'zichram, Baruch ben Moshe Yitzchak, Hashem Yikom Domo, Chayaleh ben Chaim Baruch, Hashem Yikom Domo, Chaim Yosef ben Baruch Hashem Yikom Domo. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamas will have an Aliyah. And thank you for the sponsorships. Okay, so the Gemara there, look at Rashi for just a moment. Thank you for the reminder. Says the Mishnah, Arba Chatos Mishum Tuma Do Ochel Kachim Tuma. So we'll say again, remember, one prohibition is because I'm eating sacrificial items in a state of Tuma, but Tuma Saguf, Ubekares Mishum Chelev, Umishum Nosar, Umishum Yom Kippurim, V'Asham Mi'ilos Tafila Koin Legabi Murim Zarhu. So we'll say again, the five different prohibitions that I have over here is I'm eating sacrificial items in a state of Tuma, I'm going ahead and eating Chelev, I'm eating Nosar, it's Yom Kippur, and interestingly enough, when you eat a sacrificial item that you are not permitted to eat, that is called mi'ila. Mi'ila, right? Inappropriate use of sacrificial items. So one act of eating, says Rabbi Meir, could lemaisa result in four different obligations. Interestingly enough, Rabbi Meir says, and im haisa Shabbos, v'otzia b'fiv, and if you want to make it even better, if it was Shabbos, and you walked outside with this chaylev in your mouth, then what is the halacha? Chayiv. You are chayiv for that as well. And I will say, again, that's interesting as well, because Rabbi Meir seems to be in the position, since it's an Isser Achila, it doesn't have the status of ochel, therefore, by definition, it's considered an act of carrying out in your mouth. Amrulo, they said to Rabbi Meir, don't bring that up, ein omen Hashem, because that's extraneous. Because also, remember, what we were looking at in this case is what? How many things, essentially, you can simultaneously violate? So it said, Rabbi Meir, because you could also say, oh, great, and if you're wearing shatnez, right, while you're doing all this, right, or, you're killing someone in the middle of doing all this. So they said, Rabbi Meir, what we're looking right over here is we're looking at Isurim that stem from the direct act of eating. Rabbi Meir, so again, the point of your Rabosei is that you see the fact that Rabbi Meir adds on Shabbos is that Rabbi Meir is the one who holds of this idea that of an Isser Kolo, because again, Shabbos in this particular case is something additional that comes along as these other Isurim are being violated. So the Gemara says, "Amar Leinam and Hashem, Rabbi Meir, Ali b'Deman." And who does Rabbi Meir go according to? If you look at Rashi for just a moment, actually, not yet. So Rabbi Meir, who does Rabbi Meir go according to? Actually, look at Rashi for just one moment. Rabbi Meir, Ali b'Deman. It's the last short line of Rashi. Rabbi Meir, Ali b'Deman. Kilomar nihi this savor Rabbi Meir ihu ki ay gavna iser chal al iser. So Rabbi Meir obviously holds that iser chal al iser. That one prohibition ultimately goes ahead and one prohibition devolves upon another. However, again, Rashi says, Mihu heicha dekamis kavein lidvar mitzvah lisa isha kiman mirabos of svirle. So we'll say, what's interesting over here is the following. The difference in the chalev case is that let's read in the Gemara. So whose opinion does Rabbi Meir hold? But like, I alibud Rabbi Yoshua. It feels like Rabbi Yoshua. So we're going to get into a very interesting discussion over here. Rabbi Yoshua says, Ha'amar ta bidvar mitzvah potter. Interestingly enough, Rabbi Yoshua holds that if you make a mistake while trying to perform a mitzvah, you are potter. So we'll say, what's that case? If you look at that Rashi, Rabbi Meir Aliba Deman, you see that? So skip down a little bit in that Rashi, about four lines in. He says, Alibud Rabbi Yoshua Ha'amar Patr B'msecha Shabbos Per Krabi Lezer Demila. Listen to this. The Sanya Hasam B'Gimara Misha Hayulo Shtei Tinokos. If someone had two babies, not someone gave birth to two babies, there were two babies in front of the Moel. Echad Lamo B'Shabbos Ve'echad Lamo Be'echad B'Shabbos. So we'll say one baby was scheduled to have his bris on Shabbos and the other was scheduled to have his bris on Sunday. V'shachach Umal Es Shal Echad B'Shabbos B'Shabbos. And you made a mistake and you circumcised the Sunday baby on Shabbos. Dahainu Nami Ta B'Dvar Mitzvah V'lo Asa Mitzvah Shadayin Lo Yigi Azmano Pot Rabbi Yoshua. So we'll say, Rabbi Yoshua, so what happened over here? Now we'll say, when I circumcised the Sunday baby on Shabbos, what have I effectively done? I've been Mechal Shabbos. But remember, my wrongful act was committed in the context of trying to go and perform a mitzvah. Rabbi Yoshua is of the opinion that if you make a mistake while trying to perform a mitzvah, you are potter. You are not obligated for any kind of liability for that particular act. So the Gemara says, Ela Aliba to Rabbi Eliezer. So obviously, I will say, so Rabbi Meir, who cannot hold like Rabbi Eliezer, because Rabbi Meir holds that you're chayiv in our Mishnah. Now, our Mishnah also could be a case of ta'a b'dvar mitzvah, because a person is trying to go ahead and want to get married. Now, there's a whole discussion if marriage is a mitzvah or not. That's a big machlokes aposkim. For example, in the Sefer Achinuch Paskins, there is no mitzvah of marriage. There's a mitzvah period of Arivya, right? And the mitzvah period of Arivya, procreation. But procreation is only supposed to happen in the context of marriage. So he calls almost like marriage is, don't use this like for a Sheva Brachas Vart. It's not very, not a real mitzvah, but, right? But it's like, it's what we call Hechsher Mitzvah, right? It's a preparatory act that allows you to engage in the mitzvah. Kind of like, there's no mitzvah to make tefillin, but you have to make tefillin in order to be able to have them. So ultimately, you have to have marriage in order to be able to procreate. But nevertheless, there are many others who say, no, that marriage is, Soloveitchik actually has an incredible essay about this in his Essays on Relationship, where he writes the idea that if you take that approach, then a marriage that does not result in children is then a futile union. And the Rav says that absolutely cannot be. You see from many other sources that there is a value in relationship even if it never produces offspring. So the Rav actually, the Rav therefore explains that there's a whole din in marriage by itself. But in any event, the point of here the Gemara is making is that Rabbi Meir holds that in our Mishnah, even though you are trying to perform a mitzvah, i.e. marriage, lemaisa, you're still chayiv if you make all of these mistakes. So he clearly doesn't hold like Rabbi Eliezer. Because Rabbi Yoshua is of the opinion that if you make a mistake while trying to perform a mitzvah, then what? Then you are potter. Ela ali with Rabbi Eliezer. Rather, it must be the position of Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara says, "I ba'is ema li'olam ali with Rabbi Yoshua." No, it could be that Rabbi Meir is also like Rabbi Yoshua. However, ki kam Rabbi Yoshua tabidvar mitzvah potter. They both say, when does Rabbi Yoshua say that if you make a mistake while performing a mitzvah, you are potter? When is that? Hani mili gabe tinokos. They both say that is in a case of bris milah. Why? Dizmano bohu. See, they both say here's a difference in bris milah. You could see a little bit how there could be confusion in a bris milah. Not really, but you can see the idea over here is that bris milah has a limited window in which you could perform it. The idea is the clock is ticking. So therefore, because you're on the clock, because you have a day to be able to get this done, confusion could set in, especially, again, if the bris is not happening necessarily at the first thing on the day. Remember, also, you could have a case in Shabbos where the moel is not local. If the moel is not local and he has to travel to the particular city on Shabbos, so he's in the Tchum, he can only get there perhaps at the end of the day. So because there's a time element here, Lamaisi, you could see how confusion confusion could set in. Dizman al-bahu means that a person could become overwhelmed or confused as a result of the time constraint. Avahai, I'm sorry? No, because most mitzvot, for example, like marriage, are not confined to a time. He says, aval hai, kevan deiz malabal. You're not on the clock for marriage, right? I mean, you can get married whenever you want. What does it matter if you get married today, you get married tomorrow? You're going to both say, don't think about how we do weddings today, right? You know, you think of the caterer or the music. Contrary to popular opinion, those are not actually the important parts of the marriage, right? So again, lemaisa, the point of here is that the act of the mitzvah of marriage itself, the halachic framework, is not confined to time. It's true, you can't do it on Shabbos, but the other 6 days of the week, there's no time element associated with it. So what I'm suggesting is like this. Maybe even Rabbi Meir could hold like Rabbi Yoshua, but even Rabbi Yoshua does not exempt you in all cases where you make a mistake in the performance of mitzvah. He only exempts you when there's like grounds for making a mistake. One of the grounds for making a mistake, when there's a certain element of hurriedness, when there's a certain element of haste because there's a time constraint. But even in our case of here, a marriage where there is no time constraint, even Rabbi Yoshua would agree that Lamaisa, you are chayiv, even though you've made a mistake in the context of the mitzvah. The Gemara says, one second, v'hari truma, de'im zman obahu, but yet when it comes to the mitzvah of truma, where I will say what? When it comes to truma, there's no real time element over here that would confuse a person. And yet what? The kapater. And yet Rabbi Yoshua holds that you're pater. What's the case? This nan. Hayo ochal betruma v'nodoshu ben grusha ben chalutza. I will say it's actually a very interesting case. So imagine Aaron HaKohen is sitting there eating his truma. He's a Kohen. And then what happens? His parents sit him down to have the conversation that what? Sorry, but you know, we love you, but we have an illegal marriage, right? Your mother is a divorcee. And I will say, if a Kohen finds out that his mother is a divorcee, he's no longer a Kohen. Now, obviously, when we say divorcee, I'm not talking about that his parents are divorced. It means that when his father, the Kohen, married his mother was divorced from another man. That is a legal marriage. A Kohen cannot marry a divorcee. So let's say, again, little Aaron HaKohen, not a little Aaron HaKohen, is munching on his truma, and he finds out that he's a Ben Grusha, or he finds out that his mother is a divorcee. So what's the halacha? So we'll say now, it turns out Rabbi Eliezer, Mechayev Karen V'chomesh. Rabbi Eliezer says, not only do you have to deal with the familial news, but now you're also chayiv to pay because you illegally ate truma. And I will say, if you illegally eat truma, you have to pay principal plus a penalty fifth. Rough day. Rabbi Yoshua Poter. And Rabbi Yeshua, on the other hand, says that what? That's your pater. Why? Because Rabbi Yeshua will say, look, that's tab edvar mitzvah. The consumption of truma, if you are a Kohen, is a mitzvah. You made a mistake in the performance of a mitzvah, and Rabbi Yeshua holds that what? L'maisa, your pater. So what do you see from here? Now, there's no time element here. So you see very clearly that Rabbi Yeshua seems to hold that if you make a mistake in the performance of a mitzvah, you are always pater, and it's not limited to something that has to be done, perhaps, in haste. Ha'it ma'ala amara bibi barabaye. No, what's the case over here? Hacha b'tshuma be'erev ha'pesach, askinan dizman abahu. Oh, what's the case over here, Abosai? The case over here is truma, that's chametz, and it's erev pesach, in which case what? There absolutely is a time crunch. So because there is a time crunch, that's why Rabbi Yoshua ultimately holds that you would be potter. V'boisei, the other possibility is, be'iser bas achos va'aliba de Reb Shimon. Abosai, the other possibility is what? That we're dealing with simultaneous prohibitions according to the position of Rabbi Shimon. Abosai, remember, Rabbi Shimon is one, we saw Rabbi Shimon yesterday, that Rabbi Shimon is the opinion who holds that l'maisa iser chal al iser. So if one iser could go ahead and be chal on another iser, then l'maisa, again, you could have an issue ultimately again of iser bas achos. Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. V'boisei, so also remember, according to the first approach, we were suggesting that the entire Mishnah reflects the view of Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir is the opinion who holds that Lamaisa, again, Isser Chalal Isser, Isser Bas Achos, and the only Shaila was, who does Rabbi Meir align himself with? Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Eliezer? Rabbi Yoshua or Rabbi Eliezer, sorry, Rabbi Yoshua. No, Rabbi Yoshua, right? Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer, which one of his two Rebbeim? Now the Gemara is suggesting, no, that at the end of the day, Lemaisa, perhaps our entire Mishnah is reflecting the view of Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara is, look at Rashi again for just one moment. Our Mishnah is not Rabbi Meir. Ella afilu l'Rabbi Shimon to make al hacha modi v'kagon dechalu kulu b'asachas. And maybe again the Mishnah reflects the view of Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion of that iser chalal iser b'asachas. Ultimately, again, when those iserim occur simultaneously, to which the Gemara says Kulu meshkachas lahu. So we'll say you could go ahead and all three of the first three cases mentioned in the Mishnah, namely eshes ish, eshes ach, achos ishto, all of those cases could occur b'vas achas. How? Dishavinu shliach, v'shavu inhu shliach, upagu shliach b'shliach. So we'll say what happens. So let's say again, the man appointed a shaliach for to establish kiddushin. The woman appointed a shaliach to go ahead and be makabal the kiddushin. And what happened? The shluchim got a little bit mixed up. Everybody accepted kiddushin on behalf of the other. Now the moment that they accept kiddushin, it turns out that what? That lamaisa, again, they're married to an eshes ish, they're married to an eshes ach, and they're married to, ultimately, again, an achos isha. However, elenidos, hecha mishkachasla. So I say, the point the Gemara is making over here, you can have simultaneity in all of those isurim. But how do you have simultaneity in the case of nida? Amrav Amram Amrav Bishofas Misoch Yud Gimel La'achar Shloshasar Lichiyuve Inhu Umitoch Shneimasar La'achar Shneimasar La'chayuve Inhu. We'll say, what's the case? The case is where the women become nidos from right before the 13th. Meaning, this would be a case of essentially where two men who just became men are marrying two women who just became women. And the case would be over here where her nidus, right? Her nidus flow began before she was 12 and went into her 12th year and began before the boys became, the men, became before they were 13 and when they came 13. The idea is that at the moment that each of them reached the age of maturity, the women were in a state of nidus. Now that creates a simultaneity in all of these cases. Okay, says the Gemara. Mafrishin also. So we'll say, remember again, so the Mishnah said over here, going back to the last case of the Mishnah, that after you figure out who's really married to who, so what is the halacha? We'll say, these couples have married each other. So after they've discovered who's married to who, what's the halacha? We separate each woman from her husband for 3 months. Why? Because we want to see if they're pregnant. And ultimately, again, we want to see, obviously, if they are pregnant, that is disastrous because those children will be mamzerim. The hope is that we'll see that they're not pregnant, and they can each go back and resume living with their regular husbands. To which the Gemara says, but 1 second, v'ha ein isha misaberes b'biyarishona. The Rabbos say, this is a Talmudic principle. That a woman does not conceive from the first act of relations. Now I will say, the truth is, it's hard to prove this concept medically today. Now again, this could just, whenever you see statements like this, this could just be reflective of what people thought at the time. Now the truth is, interestingly enough, and I actually spoke to someone last night about this, an OBGYN about this, and so I asked about this concept, like, is there any way to go ahead and explain this particular concept? So actually what she told me was that it's possible in two ways. It's possible, A, that what Chazal were referring to is that very often if a woman has never been intimate before, if a wedding night is the first act of intimacy, so a woman could be nervous. That tension ultimately could cause, you know, the vaginal muscles to tense up. And if that's the case, penetration may never occur. If penetration never occurs or may not fully occur, it's possible that she just doesn't become pregnant. The other possibility is that there's no question, they say that there are definitely studies that have established a link between stress levels and fertility rates, between stress levels and ultimately the ability to conceive. So if a woman is exceptionally, if it's a stressful situation, then lamaise, again, it could impact fertility. But again, it's not ironclad, but lamaise, I think that there's another possibility for this. I think that the other possibility for this that what Chazal could sometimes be expressing is that sometimes, because often it's the first act of intimacy for man and woman, it's possible, I try to keep this G-rated here, it's possible that lamaise, the hotzah zera, that ejaculation could sometimes occur even before penetration is fully complete. And that's why ultimately, again, sometimes pregnancy may not occur. In any event, this was the belief of Chazal. This was the belief of Chazal ultimately, again. And look, and it could also be, by the way, the other possibility is there are concepts of nishtanu hateva. There are concepts that the makeup of people, not the physiological makeup, but people change because of different societal factors. It's the same way that we know that once upon a time, the consumption of meat and fish together was a dangerous combination for people. I don't know, does it have to do with mercury level in fish or whatever else? Lemaisa, it's real. I mean, when Chazal answered that, that was not like a hocus pocus thing, that was real. Clearly today people eat fish and meat all the time together and they seem to be okay. So things, whatever it is, Chazal are expressing their reality. So the Gemara says, so I don't understand. If the assumption over here is that Lemaisa, the men and women, that there was one act of relations, so why do you have to separate them for 3 months afterwards? After all, what? The woman doesn't become pregnant from the first act of relations. What's the case here? The case is where they had relations, and then they had relations a second time afterwards. So therefore, again, even if you want to say for the first act, then they can't become pregnant, but from the second act, they absolutely can. But I'll say, if that's the case, that you're setting this up as a situation where they had two acts of relations, then what? Then when we said before that in total, they would have 16 sacrificial obligations, they should have what? 32. Because remember, 16 is 4 per person per act. So if it's been 2 acts, then Lemaisa, again, it's 32. And I will say, furthermore, according to Rabbi Eliezer, who holds that when a person engages in an illegal act of relations, a person is chayiv, I'll call koach v'koach. I will say, it's a very interesting situation. I'll call koach v'koach means that he's chayiv for every, what we'll call every pleasurable act in the context of relations, meaning not just one chiyuv for the act of relations. For example, where this comes up, Rashi quotes it at the end of this Rashi. Rashi quotes this idea that if a man is having relations with his wife and she says to him, I think I'm a nida. It's a very serious situation. Mm-hmm. So Lemaisa, again, the Gemara paskins that he's not just permitted to withdraw, because the act of withdrawing in a state of arousal, by definition, is pleasurable as well. Therefore, again, that'll be like a person ultimately, again, is still experiencing pleasure from the act of relations with the nida. So the Mishnah says he has to wait, ultimately, again, until the arousal dissipates, and then he's permitted to withdraw. Because that's the position of Rabbi Eliezer, of who did I just quote over here? Rabbi Eliezer, who says that you're chayav al koach v'koach. So the Gemara is just saying, you know, again, there's ein l'davar sof with this, with how much you could be chayiv. Ella debekoach rishon kachashiv, hachinami debirishon kachashiv. So it's still what the Gemara seems to say is that even if there are two repeated acts of relations, and the assumption is that those two acts occur one after the other continuously, Lemaisa, we look at that as one act of relations, the same way that we don't accept Rabbi Eliezer's view that you're chayiv for every single movement that causes pleasure during the act of relations, but you're only chayiv once for the act of prohibited relations. So too over here, even if there's a second bia that comes right on the heels of the first, Lemaisa, again, you're only going to be chayiv once. And therefore, again, I will say, that's why we still call that a bia rishona. Amrli Rav l'Rav Nachman. So Rav said to Rav Nachman, v'hatamar. So now the Gemara goes on a little bit of a tangent. The Gemara is bothered by this idea that a woman can't become pregnant from bia rishona. So the Gemara says, really, v'hatamar b'bia rishona i'abra. But yet again, what? But yet Tamar became pregnant from the first time. So the Gemara says, so Rashi points out over here, v'hatamar i'abra bia rishona me Yehuda. So the first time Tommy comes pregnant from the first act of relations that she has, not from the first act of relations that she has with Yehuda, the Gemara, for some reason, we'll see why later on, considers Tamar's act of relations with Yehuda to be her first bia, even though what? Even though she was married to two husbands before, and we'll discuss that in just a moment. Amarle, Tamar be'etzba ma'acha. Both is very interesting. That Tamar literally be'etzba ma'acha, literally with her fingers dissolved. If you look at Rashi for just a moment, be'etzba ma'acha, kodem bia, upischa pasuach, vahavi lei kabez bia. So both say, interestingly enough, one of the reasons why Chazal felt that the woman cannot go ahead and conceive the first time is because of the presence of the hymen, because of the presence of the membrane. So again, how that exactly figures into this entire discussion, Lemaisa, is not immediately clear, but that's what Chazal understood. So interestingly enough, so we'll see this practice that there would be women who would go ahead and essentially open a little bit more the hymen by physically manipulating it. So it's a just yishno, meaning it's to a certain degree, not all that different if a woman, let's say, uses a tampon instead of using, a woman is not married. So again, ultimately, the hymen is loosened just by that act of manipulating that area, as opposed to if that's never manipulated, ultimately, again, the hymen is much stronger, much more intact. So Tamar went ahead and manipulated the hymen in order to allow for a full penetration from the first bia, and therefore that resulted in pregnancy. Dom Rabbi Yitzchak, komo achos shal beis Rebbe, Tamar Shman. So it's interesting about say that apparently, again, in the house of Rebbe, it was common for the girls before they got married to go ahead and, you know, essentially use the tampon, essentially go ahead and try to loosen them to allow for an easier first bia. Now, Bosai, the Ritva points out that the reason they did is actually very interesting. Why do this? So they wanted to become pregnant. Why did they want to become pregnant, Bosai? Because it was the custom in the house of Rebbe that ultimately the men would often go off to yeshiva to learn for longer periods of time. So because of that, there was a concern among the women that if she did not heighten her possibilities for conception for the first act of bia, it could ultimately, again, be a while until her husband was back home. So just interesting idea. So therefore, again, the Gemara says that Kol Ma'ochos Beis Rebbe Tamar Shmon. So they used to call the girls of the house of Rebbe, they used to call them a Tamar. Because just like Tamar physically manipulated the membrane in order to be able to allow for pregnancy to occur, so these girls did the same thing as well. Tamar. So why did they call these girls Tamar? Ashem Tamar. They weren't, their names weren't literally Tamar. This was like what they were known as. Ashem Tamar Shema'acha Be'etzba. Because of Tamar, ultimately, again, who loosened the membrane with her fingers. Loosened the membrane. Vaha. So we'll say, first of all, it's also interesting, by the way, you know, how you see that clearly again. Like, people knew about this, like, they called, oh, there's a Tamar. You know, it's just interesting also to see just how different societies and different times was. So that's the same way I will say that we know that in times of the Gemara that a woman who was in Nida wore white, which meant what? That pretty much everyone knew she was an Ida, which is just interesting. And yet again, that was not considered to be a stigma. That was just considered to be a simple statement of one's state. Of course, that's also reflective of living in times where there's ritual purity and impurity. It's just interesting. In any event, so Gemara says, 1 second, how can you tell me, Vaha er va'onan? So we'll say, how can you tell me that Tamar's relations with Yehuda was her first act of relations after she was married twice to Aaron Onan, to which the Gemara says, Er va'onan shimshu shelo kidarkon. So Er and Onan ultimately only had relations with her shelo kidarkon. So we'll say, bia shelo kidarkon is anal penetration. So they never had normal relations with Tamar, and therefore, what's wrong? It's Torah, Velil Maldon Tzarech, right? You gotta learn also. So the Gemara says that they only had relations bia shelo kidarka, and therefore again she technically was a basula. So meisve kol eser. We'll see that in Ksuvus, this discussion about whether bia shelo kidarka or not allows a woman to still be a basula or not. Now this comes up, of course, again in Ksuvus, because the shail is, let's say the man knows that a woman had bia shelo kidarka, but the basulim, the hymen, is still intact. So what kind of ksuva does she get? Right? Does she get the basula ksuva or does she get a bula ksuva? So we'll get to that. In any event, the Gemara says over here that although she was married twice, both men never cohabited with her in the natural fashion, only in the unnatural fashion. Meisvei. So the Gemara raises a kasha, kol esim va'arba chodesh, dash mi bifnei v'zar mi b'chos, div Rebbe Elazar. Now this is a wild Gemara. This is absolutely a wild Gemara. I mean, I guess everything's been a little bit wild today, but this is wild halachically. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Eliezer paskins that while the woman is nursing for the 24 months, so when her husband has relations with her, so dashmi bifnim means regular relations occurs, but at the moment of hotzazar, at the moment of ejaculation, he should not do that inside of her, but rather only outside of her. Now, what's the logic behind that? Rashi says over here, dashmi bifnim v'zarmi v'chutz kedesh lo tisaber, because we're concerned, we don't want her to become pregnant, v'tigmo es b'na v'yamos, and ultimately, she'll wean her son, and the child could die. Also, we've seen this concern expressed before already about not wanting a pregnant woman to be, not wanting a nursing woman to become pregnant. It will diminish her milk supply. So I will say, this is wild. This is wild. Why, I will say? Because Amar Lei, Halalu Ein Elu Kimase Erva Onan. What are you talking about? You can't allow that, I will say. The notion of expressing Zera outside of the woman, ultimately again, is a major prohibition. In fact, it calls that the sin of Er and Onan. That's what Er and Onan do. I will say, now you should know, if anybody's looking for a Chabura topic, this is a great topic. You'll say, how is this a great topic? Because this gets into the whole definition of what Hutsa'as Zera Levatalab means. What does it mean ultimately, again, to express one's seed for no purpose? And this has incredible ramifications for fertility treatments. Because again, there are many times where for fertility treatments, a man has to express Zera outside of the context of relations. And is that called Hutsa'as Zera Levatala or not? Or if they have to capture a semen sample, and ultimately, again, they want... So I'm just saying, this is an incredible, so in all seriousness, and I guarantee you will have incredible attendance if you do this topic. Again, this will be, we'll have to move to another location. So the Gemara says the following. So the Gemara says, Kima'ase erva onan v'lo kima'ase erva onan. So it's like the act of erva onan, but not like the act of erva onan. Kima'ase erva onan dichsiv hayan ba'el eshez achi v'shichis artsa. So we'll say it's like the act of erva onan, because inachinami erva onan did not complete the act, did not emit their zera, their semen inside, but rather, again, ultimately outside. V'lo kima'ase erva onan, but it's different than the halach of erva onan, or the episode of erva onan. Why? D'lo hasam shelo kidarka, because as I said before, erva onan only cohabited shelo kidarka with tamar. V'hacha kidarka, but Rabbi Eliezer is suggesting kidarka. And I will say, obviously, we do not pass in like Rabbi Eliezer, that even if a woman is nursing, we don't want a woman to become pregnant, we never allow for ultimately ejaculation to take place outside of the woman. Again, there are other precautions that one could take. We saw that this was the birth control sugya that we saw a little bit earlier, that one of the women who is permitted to use birth control halachically is a nursing woman. A nursing woman. So the Gemara goes weiter. Ella, bishlama onen, dichsiv bei v'shichei sarta. So we'll say, the fact that Onan did this, I understand. I understand that ultimately he expressed his zera outside, because the Torah says shiches artza, that ultimately again he let his zera come out on the ground and not in the act of relations. Ela er minalam, but how do we know that Er did this as well? Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok dichsiv vayamas gam oso. So what happens? Because the pasuk says that that Er also died. He also died. Afu ba'osa misa, mace. He died in the same death as his brother. Bishlama onan mishum lo yihya hazera. So I understand Rabbi Say why Onan did not want to express the zera inside, because interestingly enough, once you're saying it's shelo kidarka, then by definition, there's no real good reason that he couldn't express the zera inside, because ultimately she wouldn't become pregnant. But lamaisa, the way the Torah indicates that the reason that Onan did not want to express the zera inside is because he did not want the zera ultimately to be his. Ela er my taima. So mean because Onan, if he had a child, he did not want that child to be the sugya of Yevamis. He did not want that child to be known as his brother's child. Ela er my taima avatachi. But why did Er do this? Kadesh lotis aber v'yachish yafya. Er did not want Tamar to become pregnant. Why didn't he want Tamar to become pregnant? Because she was beautiful, and he did not want anything to diminish her beauty. And I will say, you should know, one thing we know, interesting enough, in biblical times, is that it was very common for men to have at least two wives. And one of them was the procreation wife, and one of them was the attraction wife, right? One of them was, and in fact, again, we see this actually, and what they used to do is, we saw this actually, Rashi and Bereishis brings this down, they used to drink a kosher samimanim. They used to drink like a sterilization potion that would prevent them from having children, and that wife, her job was to be the attractive wife, and the other wife was to be the childbearing wife. And the childbearing wife became unattractive over time, and that's fine because he still had the attractive wife. So interestingly enough, again, don't use that one either, right? So interestingly enough, the Gemara, I know, it's a lot today, I know. So therefore, nice. So therefore, the Gemara says the following, therefore, both sides, so Er just simply does not want to go ahead and have children with Tamar in order not to diminish her beauty. Turn around, Banan. Osa, now the Gemara goes on. Osa, now or this is talking about over here. V'isha sheyishkav ishosa shechvas zera v'rachatzu mayim v'tamadav. Now we'll say, interesting, this is a regular pasuk. Pasuk we are talking about a man and woman have relations. After the act of relations, you have to go to the mikvah. You have to go to the mikvah, okay? This is just a regular act, legal act of relations. Nothing illicit or illegal going on over here. However, the Torah says, V'isha sheyishkav isha ish osa. The word osa is extra. What does osa come to include? Prat lekala, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. This comes to exclude a kala, that a newly married woman does not have to go to the mikvah after the act of relations. V'chachamim, the chachamim say, prat shelo kidarka. It refers to b'isha kidarka. So remember, b'isha shelo kidarka, right? As we said before, is mutter. Is that is a mutter act according to halacha. That is not considered to, even though that is an act that can't result in pregnancy. Lemaisa, again, it is not called hotzah zera levatah. It's not called expressing one seed in vain. It's permitted. So therefore, the chachamim say that osa comes to say that after piya shaloki darka, a woman doesn't have to go to the mikvah. Amar lehon, obviously, and the man also has to go to the mikvah. Both have to go to the mikvah. Amar lehon breid Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman, so Hon, the son of Rav Nachman, said to Rav Nachman, Lema kasev Rabbi Yehuda, hatorecha sa'atach shitei kala. And I will say, interesting, according to Rabbi Yehuda, why is a kala excluded from going to the mikvah after the act of relations? So I will say, very simply, this is very interesting. Because remember, when a kala, what does every single kala have done on the day of her wedding? Her makeup. If you make her go to the mikvah right after the act of relations, what's going to happen? She's going to have to take off all of her makeup. And apparently that makeup was pretty significant. It can last her a couple of days. So she's going to be upset if ultimately her wedding makeup has to come off. She wants to keep it on a few days for her husband. See over here that the Torah itself has mercy, has compassion, understands about the makeup of the kala, and therefore does not make her go to the mikvah after her first act of relations. Allows her to remain in that state of beauty for her husband for a few days. Amarle, he said no. So that's Rabbi Yehuda. Amarle, he said no. The vishin isha misaver to mirishona. He said no. The reason is because a woman can't become pregnant from the first act of bia. Now what does that mean? What does that have to do with anything? Because interesting enough, the way the Torah describes it is viisha sheishkav isha sa shichvas zera. He laid with her in a way of shichvas zera. Now, shichvas zera literally means a laying down of zera, of seed, which refers to an act that can result, that could result in pregnancy. So because, again, this is the first act, and from Chazal's perspective, it can't result in pregnancy, that's why she doesn't have to go to the mikvah. So I two different reasons as to why the kala doesn't have to go to the mikvah. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's because the Torah has mercy, as Torah has compassion on her makeup. Right? According to the second approach, it's because she can't become pregnant from this first act of bia. But my what are they arguing about? Rabbanan Savri Shechvas Zera. So the rabbis say like this. They say the phrase Shechvas Zera, that it has to be a seed that is capable of impregnating. Prat la ara, right? That comes to exclude ha'ara. We'll say ha'ara refers to the case of minimal penetration, where let's say you don't even have penetration of what we call the crown, the tip, but rather, again, perhaps just the very, remember, halachically, the definition of bia is at least the insertion of the tip, what they call the corona. The tip has to at least penetrate. Without that, that's not called bia. That's called what we call neshikas evarim, where literally the man's organs are kissing. They're touching, but there's no penetration. So therefore, again, he's saying that shechva zera means that if all there is this minimal contact, then lemai say again, you don't have to go to the mikvah for that. Osa, her prat l'shaloki darka, that comes to exclude be a shaloki darka. Rabbi Huda says shaloki darka va'aram shechva zera. Rabbi Huda says no. We learn out the fact that be a shaloki darka and what we call just simple touching of male and female organs, we learn that out from the phrase shechvas zera, because both of those acts will not produce a potential for pregnancy. Bia shelo kidarka and simple neshika sevarim will not. It's not called shechvas zera. That will not be an emission of seed that is capable of taking root. Therefore, va'ara, shelo kidarka va'ara mishechvas zera nafka. Osa. What is osa? Prat lekala. That comes to exclude the kala. Ki asa ravin amar Rabbi Yochanan. Kol sheshasa achar baila eser shanim. V'ni says shuv eni yoledes. So we'll say let's just do one more minute. Similarly, any woman that was that waited after the death of her husband for 10 years to get married and then got remarried, she's not going to become pregnant anymore. And I will say again, this is another example. This is not a scientific thing. This is what Chazal understood. So if you look at, actually, we don't have time for Rashi now. Rav Nachman says, Lo shenu ela shein dayta linasai. That's only true if what? If she had given up on getting married, so she gave up on getting married, then what? Then lemais, if she despaired on getting married for over a decade, then lemais, again, she will not become pregnant. However, but Lamais, again, if her intention was to remarry, then even after 10 years, she could become pregnant. So Rav said to the daughter of Chista, the rabbis are talking about you, because apparently, again, Rav married the daughter of Rav Chista. The daughter of Chista was widowed from her first husband for over 10 years, and now, ultimately, again, she was going to bear children. Ana datoy alach. So she said to her husband Rava, she said, I always knew that I was going to marry you. So Rashi brings down an interesting story about this, which we're not going to get into now. Hahid asli kamid Rav Yosef. So we'll listen to this. Was a woman who came before Rav Yosef. Amrle, Rebbe, Ana shahisi achar ba'ali eser shanim. I waited more than 10 years after my last husband to get remarried. Vialarati, and I had a child with my second husband. Amrle, so he said to her, Biti, my daughter, don't cast aspersions on the words of the rabbis. The rabbis know what they're talking about. So I'll say this, Amrle, she said to him, you're right. Lenachri nivalti. In the interim over here, I had an affair with a Gentile. Right? So meaning, essentially, again, I was sexually active. So because of that, lemais, again, that's why I conceived even after marrying 10 years. The kulon, all right, I'll say, no, we'll stop over here. Amr Shmuel. All right, a lot to do.
That's bad.